All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Geek Garage Podcast, the most inclusive and accessible nerd culture audio program on the interwebs. I'm your host, David Dasaw, and joined with me, as per usual, is my sexy and sultry co-host, Zach Wills. Hey, Zach Wills. It's been a hot minute.
So great. What? No, I'm doing great.
You're currently in a food coma. Am I correct?
Lethargic.
Yeah.
I think that's the best adjective. I am lethargic.
Yeah. Well, that's okay, because it's Friday as we record, and you know, you just had yourself a nice filling meal, I suppose, and you know, it's time to get down and dirty and nasty with our belated St. Patty's Day episode.
Started out the day not feeling great.
Yeah.
Feeling okay now. So that's good.
Well, that's excellent. You know, I'm really, really happy for you, because, you know, you fucked up this episode by not being able to record on a regular day, which meant that we couldn't release it on St. Patrick's Day. So it was, you know, topical and contemporary. And
well, it's okay. One day late's okay.
I will find a way to forgive you.
That's fine. Well, you don't really have a choice. I'm all you got right now. So until you start doing interviews, bud.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, folks, today we are here to talk about The Boondock Saints, the film by Troy Duffy from 1999. And yeah, this movie is it's something else. It's
something.
Yeah, it didn't. So you know, a little bit of history about this movie. I mean, I don't really know too much about the history. It just from what I've learned from like the DVD commentary and just reading the trivia and talking to other people that know much more about film. Like, this movie was supposed to get a relatively, you know, wide and public theatrical release, but then Columbine happened, and all of a sudden all the movies that had lots and lots of violence got put on the back burner and were either axed or got sent straight to DVD. And that's basically what happened to this one. They I think it got released for one night in five theaters. But it didn't really stop this movie from becoming a huge, massive cult classic, right?
It really is. I mean, I was looking at the tomato meter on this one, 28%, but the audience score, 91%.
Holy shit. That is a huge.
That's a big spread.
Yeah, that's a huge imbalance in the score. I mean, I guess it makes sense. You know,
that tells you that people like it. But I don't know what all goes into the metric for the tomato meter, but I'm going to guess cinematically, I don't really know what else. I don't know why this just didn't do it for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe we could talk about that as we move on, but yeah.
Sure.
28% is probably what I would have given it for a tomato meter score.
All right. Well, yeah. Fair enough. Well, I guess with that, let's get into it. So, we did both recently rewatch this movie, so it was fresh in our brains. We both have seen this movie several times, you know, over the years since it was released. Zach, when was the first time you saw this? Do you remember?
You're my age, right? How old were we in 1999? Do math.
Let's see. So I was born in 86, so I would have been 13, I guess.
All right, so I would have been, you're 2 years older than me, so I would have been around 11. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the last time that I saw this. Hang on just a second.
Quit. What do you have?
You bitch. She's eating a rock. Sorry, I'm dog sitting another big dog, and she's over here eating a rock.
No.
So I was probably 11 years old when I saw this movie.
So you think you saw it like right when it came out?
I was about 12 or 13, so it wasn't long after, if not that same year. So 12-year-old me, I'll just use 12-year-old me because that was probably the worst version of me. 12-year-old me probably loved it.
Sure.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, 12-year-old me probably loved it. 34-year-old me, it's all right. If you come at it artistically, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing jumped out at me that made me think it was like a bad movie. Just tonally, I lump it in with the same people who take Fight Club way too seriously. Like, if you're like a legit take this movie seriously type of fan, I lump you in with those people, and we're probably not friends. That's, for some reason, that's just the vibe I got from it.
Okay, well, dude, I got some terrible news for you because Fight Club is like literally my favorite movie.
I love the movie itself. I'm talking about people that take it way too seriously and try to follow it as a life credo.
Are you talking about the people that don't understand what Fight Club is about?
Yes, I'm talking about the people that take it way too literally and try to live their life that way. As Tyler, what's his
Durden?
Last name? Durden, yeah. Yeah. I'm talking about those people. I feel like if you take this movie seriously, I lump you in with the same people that take that movie seriously. And that's, I assume you wear a lot of Affliction shirts and we're not friends.
Is that brand even still alive?
You'd be surprised how often you see it in Florida.
It's alive and well in Florida.
Oh, you know, everything thrives down here, bud. It's a real melting pot of douchebaggery.
God, I got to get my ass down there. I'll fit right in.
You fit right in there, bud.
No, I'm proud to say I own no Affliction t-shirts.
Yeah, I know I'm painting with a broad brush. I know tonally it didn't do it for me. Nothing, like I said, nothing stuck out as like making it a bad movie to me. None of the acting, for example, whenever you see bad acting, it's obvious, right? Even if you're not well-versed in cinema. Bad acting is bad acting. Nothing stuck out to me as bad acting. The cinematography, loved it. It was all beautifully shot.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the setup and then going to the after and then showing the middle. I don't know what you call that sort of sequence of shooting.
So we're going to press pause right there because we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. I haven't even told you when I first saw this movie.
So. Oh, sorry, I jumped into it. So you tell me, you go ahead and say your dumb thing and then I'll talk about my great shit.
Thanks, Zach. Hey, you know what? I'm going to remember this. So whenever I'm down in Florida and we're together, I'm going to kick you right in your ass.
Yeah, you put on that t-shirt, bud.
Right.
So when did you see it? Were you 12 as well or... No, you were 2 years older than me, so you were probably sitting around.
No, I didn't see this movie when it came out. I saw this movie in college, I want to say. I remember it being referred to me by a friend, maybe a coworker, like one of my buddies at work. Yeah. They were like, have you ever seen the Boondock Saints? And I was like, no. And they were like, oh, you should go rent it, because that was a thing you did back in 2005, yeah. Was you rented movies. Yeah. And I remember renting it and loving it like right away. And like me and my friends, we were just quote it all the time. Like, and this was like pre Anchorman. So Right. Like
very quotable movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots and lots of quotes. And I showed this movie to my dad and he fucking loved it. Like sometimes back in the day, my dad could sometimes be a difficult person to please as far as movies go. Like I would like to show him movies and then sometimes he'd be like, what the fuck are you showing me, this is stupid. But he really liked this one, and he quotes it to me like all the time. Like he'll just send me random texts like, you know, people in glass houses sink ships. I'm like, thanks dad. You know, if you,
that's a typical father-son relationship where you try to show them something, they're like, this is stupid.
Look
anything
at this, daddy.
anything you try to show your dad.
Right, yeah.
This is Sum 41. He's like, I hate it.
But yeah, I like I said, I saw it in college, and I dug the shit out of it then. And yeah. I am you know, I'm pretty similar to you. I'm definitely not as high on it now. Like I, you know, when I rated it in my Letterbox, I think I gave it 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Cause I still love the movie. Like it will always hold a special place in my heart, but the proverbial rose colored glasses are off now, and I can look at film with a, you know, slightly more analytical eye than I could back then. Like, I think this is one of the quintessential, like, college dude, bro. Like, yep. You see this movie and like two or three others, and all of a sudden you know what film is, and you're like, and then like you from 15 years later tells you from 15 years earlier, shut the fuck up, you little dick piece of shit.
Yeah, man, I love cinema. You know, Boondock Saints, Citizen Kane.
Hi, my name is Luke Cooper. I'm a fan of cinema. My favorite movies are Citizen Kane and the Boondock Saints. I'm like, you shut the fuck up, Luke Cooper. You deserve that spanking from Michael Scott.
Holy shit, I forgot that was a scene.
Yeah, you are gonna learn to be more respectable, Luke.
I forgot he said, I just pulled those two movies. I pulled Citizen Kane out of nowhere. I forgot that was an actual thing.
Yeah.
That's an accidental office reference. That's the first one.
Yeah, you're pulling it from your subconscious.
Yeah. It's the office is buried deep in there.
Yeah, it is. So let's see. So, one note that I had was, have your opinions on the movie changed since you saw it? We kind of already touched on this a little bit. So
they
did.
They way did. The stuff you like when you're 12 is just not the stuff you're going to like when you're 30.
I mean,
30 plus years old. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed watching it. I just don't. There was some stuff where you're just like, all right, you know, one, it doesn't hold up in a lot of ways. We've had a pretty massive culture shift, not only from aging from then, but just societally. Right. So you see some things, you're like, well, that couldn't be made today. No,
sure.
No way.
Yeah, I don't think this movie, well, I think this movie as a whole could still be made today. In fact, I was thinking about this earlier when I was writing up the small amount of notes that I have, but I think it would do really well as like an HBO or Showtime, like limited series.
Yeah,
or
there you go. That
like
would
a
be
regular
cool.
series.
Where that they, would be cool.
They reboot it, and instead, like they have, you know, I think they have maybe like 3 or 4 like kill sessions in this movie.
Yeah.
What if they had like a kill session every episode? So every episode was centered around like, you know, another mob family or a subset of a mob family or just anyone.
Love that.
Yeah. Minus all the racism and homophobia that runs rampant in this movie.
Yeah,
this,
you're gonna have to brush off some of the the old dust there. But
yeah, we'll come back to that here in just a second.
So I think, what if they did make it like a mini series? Let me play here for a second. Willem Dafoe, you're bringing him back. Natch, right? I'm thinking Colin Farrell for sure. Maybe Leo as one of the other brothers.
So you're thinking older guys for casting? I was thinking maybe you'd go younger.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Let's see. Who would be good? Should they be Irish or?
No, I mean, they can, as long as they're, you know, good
you
actors
know,
and can play the part.
You know who I think would be pretty good is maybe Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah,
he'd be
you know,
cool.
I thought about him too.
Let's see who else who would be good. Maybe one of the Skarsgård brothers, maybe like Bill.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know, I have to come back to that.
Well, who's gonna play the Willem Dafoe type character though, that sort of detective who's like the, seems to have a just like a penchant and a gift for the job?
Yeah.
Who has that like eccentric? I mean, Johnny Depp can play the eccentric type.
Yeah, he can. Let's see. Man, I'm not really good at these casting on the spot.
It's a fun thought experiment, though.
You know what would have been great is if we could have like pre-gamed this episode and come up with this idea beforehand.
No. Let's do it on the fly, bud. Let's just sit here for 30 minutes and just work this out. That's good radio.
So, you know, turns out that this director, the director and writer of this movie is a bit of a wild card and a weirdo and potentially a giant fucking asshole.
Oh yeah.
So it
good. Let's cancel this guy right now.
All right. So I'm not looking to cancel this guy. I mean, so at the time of, you know, this movie, it sounded like he was not that great of a guy.
Like how so? Do you have any examples of?
It's
difficult to work with.
I don't think he was necessarily difficult to work with, but he just seemed like he had a bad attitude. Okay. I was talking to my buddy Mac, and he was saying that he minus the roofie thing, he gave Harvey Weinstein a run for his money because him and like Harvey Weinstein was the person who purchased the script and helped him make the movie.
Okay.
I mean, they eventually split ways because they couldn't come to an agreement for certain things. I forget the whole business aspect of getting this movie made, but I was reading in the trivia that Troy Duffy, like he, like people were talking about who to cast as the two brothers, and like Keanu Reeves was considered, and who else? It was Keanu Reeves. And Ethan Hawke. And
Ethan Hawke would be a good one.
Yeah. He said that Keanu Reeves was a fucking punk and Ethan Hawke was a talentless fool. And those are quotes.
Okay.
And I'm like, what fucking planet do you live on?
Okay.
But like this dude legit ran a bar. Like he owned a bar. And he didn't own it. Like he was a bartender and he wrote this script while he was a bartender. So he has like no filmmaking experience whatsoever. And so like, I'm like, I don't know. He just like the few things that I've read about him, and that I've come across in the trivia. I'm just like, this dude,
not great,
but people change. And so he could, like, I am not the same dude that I was, you know, back 20 years ago,
yeah, that's
10
fair.
Years ago.
I sucked.
Yeah. I was a shit heel.
Yeah, I was too.
20 years ago.
No, so. I get it. And I think that's fair to say. So I'm not going to make assumptions about this dude now. I don't know. Honestly, I can't name any of his other work and I haven't looked into it, but I'm going to double down on my series idea. We are going to make it in the future. It's going to be Ben Affleck.
Okay.
And it's going to be Colin Farrell's The Brothers, and I'm bringing back Willem Dafoe, and they're working together still because they didn't give any conclusion. So it leaves it wide open for a series. I'm going to say in the future.
Well, you do realize that there's a Boondock Saints 2 and there's going to be a 3, right?
Don't care. My idea.
You know who would also...
In my little fan fiction, this is what I'm making.
I mean, if we are going older, Jeremy Renner would be good too, I think.
I have to Google Jeremy Renner.
He's Hawkeye from the Avengers.
Okay, there you go. Fair enough. Yeah, very good. Yeah. Oh, it was him and Affleck and...
In the Town.
Yeah, The Town. Very good movie.
Yeah. I just recently saw that movie this year. And
did you really?
Holy shit, dude. Yeah. That movie is fucking great.
So good.
Yeah. Like, I can't believe I sat on that movie for so long. It was, it blew me away. But anyways, one thing I wanted to chat about was the importance of opening this movie with them at the church and the priest talking about that real life story of Kitty Genovese, who back, I think it was in the 70s, she was at her condo or apartment complex, and all these people like came out when out of their homes when they heard her screaming, and she was getting, she got raped and stabbed repeatedly to death, and no one did anything. Zach, I don't know if you heard of this story prior to seeing this movie. I actually learned about this story in my psychology class. Like, we analyzed, because I think it's called like the Genovese effect or something.
Do you remember anything about that effect? Like, why?
Yeah, so it's basically when you're witnessing something horrific, you're kind of frozen and don't really know what to do, and you don't call for help because you are under the assumption that someone already has.
Oh.
And so, yeah, that's what makes this so terrible, is that, you know, this girl getting stabbed to death, and everyone's just standing around watching because everyone is under the assumption that the authorities had already been called. And no one did. An argument could be made if you wanted to be on, like, I guess the quote unquote safe side, or, you know, play devil's advocate. Like, yeah, it's the incarnation of the Genovese effect, or, you know, it's the opportunity where they coined that term when this happened. Or if you wanted to go more along the lines of what the priest is talking about, you know, he says, you know, there's a greater fear we have than evil, and it's the indifference of good men. And that's basically, you know, turning a blind eye to the evil in this world. And that's kind of the theme that kicks this movie off. And I don't know, it's just, I paid more attention to that part of the movie this time around for whatever reason. And I don't know, it kind of
Topical, huh?
Yeah. That seems like it's always topical, right?
Yeah, lately, doesn't it?
Yeah. But anyways, so yeah, you were talking about this a little bit earlier about the storytelling.
Yeah.
And how it's, you know, we get, it's not so much in the first scene, but all the other killing sequences where you know, the Agent Smecker is analyzing the scene, he's describing what happens, and it cuts back and forth between him describing it and the actual occurrences of that scene, right?
Yeah it's like a flashback sandwich. Like, you see everything leading up to it, then you see the after.
Right.
And then they give you the recap, like, right in the middle. I don't know what you call it, like, cinematically, but...
Yeah, and then with certain scenes, there's actual crossover.
He's in there. It's very theatrical. I want to say artsy, but it's very theatrical how he plays this, like...
There was a firefight!
Yeah, it's like this big, dramatic presentation, and he's actually at one point... And I assume this is like some vision in his own mind where he's firing his weapon into the air in this neighborhood surrounded by officers. Like, I don't think he actually did that in, you know, in fiction, but I guess they wanted to illustrate his role in this sort of fantasy or this sort of reality he's making for himself, I guess.
Yeah, that's just Willem Dafoe being Willem Dafoe. He's like, you know what? Fuck this. I got this. I've played this role before.
I bet he's a terrifying human being. I know nothing about the man. I've never seen him in an interview, but I bet he's a terrifying human being to be around.
Maybe. I mean, I certainly would be intimidated to meet him, but I would love to meet him. I'm willing to bet he's a pretty nice guy.
I don't know.
But
scares the crap out of me.
Well, he does play the Green Goblin.
I know. He plays just the weird and villain just very well. And I feel like that's got to come from some dark place.
All right. So let's see. Yeah. So, do you have a favorite kill sequence or scene? So we have, let's count them off. We have the first one, which is after the bar fight when the Russians right. come, and he drops the toilet on their head. Mm-hmm. Classic. The next one is it's either the next day or the day after, where you know they fall down from the ceiling and they get tangled up in the rope and right. they do the 360 spin and kill all the mobsters yeah. in that funny room. The next one, let's see, isn't that at the
porno booth?
Yeah, it's a little fire.
What do you call it? I don't even know what you call that.
Yeah, I was about to call it the Spank Bank.
That's good a name as any. I didn't know places like that existed.
Yeah, so. In Boston, I guess. This was 1999. It could have been cleaned up by now, but
I have no idea.
Yeah, but yeah. So there was that one, and then the quote unquote final one, or the. Seems like it was the biggest one where they get El Duce to come in and try and stop the McManus brothers. But it's
it was a firefight at that guy's house and yeah. he was in the bathroom. And then there's the final one where they get the main mob boss, the right. Italian dude, whatever his name was.
Yeah.
In the courtroom. So.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite?
The most fun one was obviously the stupid fucking rope scene.
Yeah, that was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, they fall through the ceiling, and it's like it never works that way in movies, and they have this whole back and forth, and even Detective whatever his name is, Willem Dafoe, is like, you know, these guys think they're in a movie and it never works that way, and even they said it in the flashback scene, you know, it never works that way in the movie. Somebody jumps over the couch and you got to shoot at him for 10 minutes and but it yeah. just they kind of fell into this movie like reality, or this movie like instance.
Yeah, I did like that, the acknowledgement of the ridiculousness of the, you know, the theatrics and how right. that all played out. Like it was very Deadpool-esque, where they, you know,
yeah, that's a good way to put it,
not necessarily breaking the fourth wall, but just kind of self-realizing the ridiculousness of the situation and all that. But
yeah
that was a fun one. I don't know if that's my favorite. I don't know. I'd say
that first one was probably the most emotionally impactful.
Yeah, like when he rips the toilet out of the ground, and you see all the blood coming out of his wrists.
Yeah, and there's that scene when the one brother's like being walked out, and that look back scene. You know what I mean? None of them had that sort of emotion.
Sure. It. I mean, there was the pool party scene, you know, when with the dude in the bathroom, I'm not talking about pool as in like swimming pool, the pool
poker game.
Yes. Poker game. Sorry. Yeah. There was pool too, but
yeah, there
was, I mean, people lost limbs, like a finger and yeah, that scene afterwards where they're like cauterizing their wounds, God, it gets
with
me
the
like,
iron.
Yeah, it gets me every time. Like it used to be so painful to watch.
To a hospital, I guess, right?
I guess you could, but they'll start asking a lot of questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
you know the cops are waiting for people to come in with gunshot wounds when they're trying to find these guys, so
mm-hmm.
I think you kind of have to treat your wounds like a Civil War soldier in your apartment and
yeah, literally bite the bullet,
put a hot iron on it.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe that one. Although I do love the one at the end when it feels really cool when Agent Smecker is finally like, fuck it. You know what? I'm going to help these guys out. And, so yeah. Let's see. I jotted down some random notes as I was watching the movie. So these are kind of in order. I just put down Discman.
Right.
Cause like, I was like, oh yeah, he listens to music. And I couldn't remember if he broke out a Walkman or if he broke out like a Discman. And right. I was like, oh my God, like I totally forgot. Like kids these days will never know about skip protection.
Skip protection. You had to have it.
You did. It, like
you were always testing it. And you're like always like hitting it, trying to see if it works.
Yeah. Like you'd buy one and it'd be like 120 second skip protection. And you'd be like, awesome. And meanwhile, you don't know what the fuck that means. Like no and one ever things, knew what that means.
They never fit in a jacket pocket.
Never.
The CD industry and the jacket industry never collaborated closely enough to figure out
nope.
we could make these fit in at least one of the pockets that wasn't a starter jacket with the Green Bay Packers logo on it or something like that. You know those big pockets they had in the middle?
Oh, yeah. I owned one of those jackets. I got one for...
Every child did. If you were working class in the Bible Belt, I feel like we all had one.
It was a rite of passage, I yeah. feel like. Is
because if you couldn't you get know, it at Walmart, you could get it at Goodwill because somebody right. always gave one.
Yeah, you have those and your acid wash jeans. Yeah, you're good to go. Your Lisa Frank notebook.
Yard sale clothes.
Yeah, hell exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so I thought that was funny. That definitely dates this movie. I mean, the Discman back in 99, that's right on target there. That tracks. I also have a note. Sassy Defoe is the best. He is sassy as fuck in this movie. Of course, he is gay, but he's more, he's a little bit more of the masculine persuasion, I suppose.
It's like a self-loathing type, isn't he? I mean,
he kind of is. Like, you see him in the gay bar, but, you know, he has that line, like, pour the drink, you fairy fuck. And
yeah, he says a lot. I don't know anything. I don't know enough about gay culture to speak on that, but I feel like that's got to be something.
Yeah I mean, you see the looks that he gets from all the dudes and
everybody bar. Else around him,
yeah, like, and they're like, oh my gosh. And I mean imagine being in that bar and hearing that. You'd be like, what the fuck is happening?
I feel like it's like almost a fight immediately. Like, how are you not just constantly in fights,
right,
if you're that person?
Yeah. But yes, anytime that his character wasn't being self-loathing I guess you can be homophobic if you are gay. I don't know how that works. I'm cisgendered, so I can't really speak on that. But
yeah, I can't either, and I'm not even going to try. Yeah. It would be insulting whatever I say. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
I would say something wrong so fast, not even meaning to.
Yeah. Then we have the scene with Rocco, and it's the main scene we see Ron Jeremy in. Like, it's pretty much the only scene that he's got a speaking part in, and you know, right. it's them two and the main mafia guy.
It's and he's so weird. I thought he was great. I loved his little role that he had. I thought he was great.
Yeah, he's very funny. But the joke that Rocco tells is so bad. It's so rough. Fucking funny. But yeah, I can't even, like, you know. So folks, if you have seen this movie, you know the joke we're talking about. Not going to repeat it. But it's
speaking of canceled.
Yeah, it's funny, but it is so bad.
Yeah, the spirit of it, I get like why he chose that one, I guess, for this person, but
right.
Like I said, nothing really, or not a lot holds up. you're not going to get this movie again. I'll put it that way.
No. Yeah. Like I said, when we were a little while ago, when we were pitching the, possible reboot of this, we would keep all the great stuff and ditch all the homophobia and the racism and whatnot. So,
yeah.
I also thought some of the fake blood looked pretty dodgy at times.
Yeah, they have some of that kind of that bright red Tarantino-esque type blood.
Yeah, it was pretty bright red in spots. I was like, I guess you couldn't afford like better fake blood. Like,
I don't even know. Like, Do we have anything on like what the budget of this guy was?
I don't know. If you want to look that up.
No, it's box office gross. Box office gross, $19,000. Okay. Well, like you said, it wasn't out hardly at all.
No, it was, I think I read it was out for one night and it showed in 5 theaters.
Yeah, hang on a second. Yeah. Boondock Saints, 1999 production budget. Let's see.
Anything?
Budget $6 million estimated. Which is extremely low.
Yeah, that is.
Even by 1999 standards, I feel like that's pretty low.
Yeah, adjusted for inflation, what that would probably be close to what, like 20 million?
Yeah, maybe? Probably something like that. Just guessing, I don't know, but yeah.
But like the first John Wick movie was made for 18 million.
So, let me, just as a barometer, Napoleon Dynamite production budget. Let's see what.
That movie was made for pennies.
Hang on, I can't type.
And Napoleon Dynamite, that only came out a few years later. I think that was 2004.
Okay, 400,000, not even close. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
we're not even in the same ballpark. That's what I'm talking about. Like this movie, like I said, tonally and some of the content is like ugh, but I mean there's nothing in this that stood out to me that makes me like cringe, like oh, it's a bad movie. None of the acting, cinematography is beautiful, the writing is good. Like it's just eh. It just didn't do it for me. I don't know. It just didn't hold up for me as opposed to 12-year-old me.
Sure. Yeah, no, I totally get that. You know what scene is still fucking great is the what the fucking motherfucking how did you two fucking fucks fuck?
See, it's like stuff like that. They, his character in the scene with the cat, what color was it, bitch?
Yeah.
All his stuff is funny. I mean.
Yeah,
I loved it growing up.
Yeah, I was reading that they wrote that character in there just for that guy. Like,
yeah, kind of feels that way now that you say that.
Yeah, like the actor's name, David Del Rocco, is the same name that they gave the character. I mean, they just call him Rocco.
Oh, you're right.
They just call him Rocco in the movie, but he has the same name. And yeah, like apparently they wrote him into the movie just as the dude is in real life, I thought was pretty entertaining. Also, like the cat scene, they accidentally shoot the cat.
Is it dead?
Is it dead?
He's so spastic.
Yeah. God. Funny.
Squeezing the trigger on an empty gun.
So funny. Let's see. Oh yeah, and then what he says right before he goes into the diner to shoot all those guys that
catch you on
him
the
over.
Flip side.
Yeah, catch you on the flip side. Like I say that all the time, like over text message and when I'm hanging up with friends on the phone. Like I always say that, like. And I got it directly from this movie. Like I never said it before I saw this movie. And now it's
that seemed so out of place for me.
What, catch you on the flip side?
Yeah. Like where did that come from? It's 1999. Nothing about this character, like to me said that would be something he would say just as an exit line. I don't know where that came from.
I think he said it because it was a little out of character for him. Because, I mean, you know, you see him all like spastic, like kind of before, you know, the night when they're, you know, drinking and stuff and carrying on, like he's, you know, acting like a drunken idiot. But, you know, before, like he kind of is calm and reserved and like he realizes, you know, what's up, and he's like,
that's his cool moment line though, when he's about to go in and shoot some people in a diner,
trying to justify.
I'm just saying it seemed odd, like that really stuck out to me. I saw that today when I was watching this just a few hours ago, and I was like, that's just so weird. That's such an odd choice for that line.
I don't know. I mean, it never never bothered me, but
I don't know. It stuck out to me. I'm just being nitpicky. I don't know.
Whatever. You're just being an asshole.
Being a dick. Yeah. I'm
just playing. I think that's pretty much it that I had on this movie. I know we were kind of all over the place with it and didn't really have a organic flow, but
no, I told you I was bringing nothing to this. It was a miracle that I found time to watch it and sit down and record with you. So.
Well, I mean, we can cut it short for this episode. We can spend a little bit more time on our shit that doesn't suck, because I got
I've been
watching a lot of stuff.
Me too.
Here recently, so we can get to our shit that doesn't suck.
Hit it.
Shit that doesn't suck.
Do you want to go first, or would you like me to go first?
I know we're overlapping on some things, so I'll just tell you the four things that I'm watching. Still watching Gilded Age, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, fantastic on Amazon Prime. Still watching Our Flag Means Death, adorable. That's the only adjective I can think to describe that show, because it is. And Space Force, still on season one, but I'm actually loving that more than the first time I attempted to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Our Flag Means Death is absolutely adorable. That is
such a funny show. It's cute. It's funny.
Even more than the Pirates of the Caribbean series or franchise, it is so incredibly wholesome. It's the most wholesome pirate show you will ever watch.
It is. It is.
And it is done in a way that only Taika Waititi can deliver. Mm-hmm. He's the only
Blackbeard.
So good.
Man.
I love
him.
Yeah. Yeah. I love him to death. And Space Force, I watched that as well. Did I suggest that to you?
Yeah.
Okay. I couldn't remember. I mean, I'm not trying to take credit or anything. I know that you said you were trying, you attempted to start watching it beforehand, and then
it's been on my list forever. I don't know. I think I gave it a shot and I watched one episode, but I actually sat down with intent and tried to watch it, and so far I'm loving it. I think I am on the last episode, season one, about to jump into season two.
It's great. Season two is pretty good too. I think season one's a little bit better. I think it has a little bit better structure to it, but yes, I mean, season two is great as well. That actually just dropped a couple weeks ago, I think.
Yeah.
Have you ever
got into Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
No, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Because you said you were watching it and you recommended it, and I put it on my list. It's on my short list to check out.
Yeah, whenever you finish one, put that in your queue. That one, pay attention to, first of all, the writing, amazing, acting obviously good, but beautifully shot. Pay attention to the colors that they use.
Okay,
that really sticks out when you notice it. It's very cool.
Yeah. I've between you and everyone else that has seen it, I've heard nothing but wonderful things about it. So Netflix is really ramping up their original movies. They had that big trailer several weeks ago where they were like, look at all the movies we're doing in 2022. It's basically like a new movie every Friday. I think that's what they're gunning for. And this past Friday was the Adam Project dropped, and that's the fun family sci-fi movie with Mark Ruffalo and Ryan Reynolds and who's the actress? I can't remember. Jennifer, I don't know. Sorry,
Lawrence, Love Hewitt.
No,
Aniston.
That might not even be. Let's see.
Lopez. I'm running out of Jennifers.
Jennifer Garner.
There you go.
Yep, that's it. And Zoe Saldana. Of course, she kicks lots of ass. But no, it's I didn't really have high hopes for this movie. I mean, it's Ryan Reynolds and
what's it about? I don't even know this one.
So it's basically he time travels back to his younger, like I think he's like early teenager, and he has to he tries to find a way to stop his dad from creating this device that creates time travel. He's basically trying to stop the invention of time travel, because it would then further prevent, you know, disastrous stuff. So imagine
if you go back in time to prevent time travel, but if there's infinite universes, there's somebody trying to come back to that timeline to prevent you from preventing time travel. Did I just spoil the movie for myself?
they have a very funny way of addressing the issues and conundrums of time travel in this movie. It's very it doesn't take itself too seriously. We'll put it that way.
Okay.
I definitely recommend it though. It is very heartwarming, and I was pleasantly surprised by it.
Okay.
So, I rewatched Little Miss Sunshine the other day. That's you know, always a good one.
Years since I've seen that.
Yeah, it's a good one. Also, rewatch Almost Famous. Always a fucking classic. Came out right around the time that Boondock Saints did, just the year after. And then Nightmare Alley, which is the new Guillermo del Toro movie that hit HBO a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And it is fan-fucking-tastic. As a noir fan and just a fan of del Toro's work in general, he nailed this movie. I know that there's several other iterations and versions of this movie out there that are much older. I don't know much about those. I just know about this one, and this one is fan fucking tastic. It is absolutely beautiful. It's gorgeously shot. The acting performances by everyone, by Bradley Cooper and Cate Blanchett and Rooney Mara. There's a lot of big name heavy hitters in this movie, and they all fucking bring it. It's excellent. So
nice.
Yeah, that's my shit that does not suck for this week. So, yeah. Zachary, you got anything else?
I don't think so.
No?
Cool. I don't think I do.
Dope. All right. Well, listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. We appreciate you hanging in there. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll catch you again next week. Don't forget to review the podcast if you haven't already. You can do that on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Stitcher. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And yeah, that'll be it. Be kind, stay geeky, and eat lots of cheesecake. Bye-bye.
Catch you on the flip side.
Yeah, bringing it back. That's right.